Welcome to the A Minute to Midnight show, folks. This is Tony. Great to have you listening with us again today. I just want to say that there are a few audio issues due to Doug's cell phone connection in this show. Sorry about that, but it's a great show and worth listening to. Just bear with the audio issues today. So without any further ado, let's jump into it. I want to welcome back to the A Minute to Midnight show, Doug Perry. We had Doug on the show, I think the last time was August 2016, so it's been a while, so it's great to be chatting to you again today, Doug.
Thanks, Tony. Glad to be here.
Cool. Yeah, I was just saying to you quickly off air that, you know, pretty significant day. We've just seen Donald Trump announce that America will recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital and then moving the embassy. So I think whether people like Donald Trump or not, or whether they think he's crazy or whether, you know, he's brave or crazy, I don't know. But I think it's really prophetically significant that it's happening now.
Certainly. Yeah, I back in 2004, when I got filled with the Holy Spirit and had a vision of how bad things are and how much we need to hurry, the Lord told me not to never vote again. And I pretty much stay out of all of that stuff. When it was time for the elections, I between Hillary and Donald Trump, I just prayed that whoever would bring Jesus back the soonest would get elected. And it's kind of a toss up which one of them it would be.
Yeah.
But he's certainly, whether he is crazy or brave, I'm not sure, but he's certainly doing some things that other presidents have not dared to do. This is one that, you know, I mean, God's timeline is what it is, but legitimately, this is something that should have been done a long time ago.
Yeah.
And I think it's just for fear that they haven't. And it absolutely, I think, is a sign of a bunch of things that are coming.
I agree. You know, we're just seeing so many things line up at the moment, even the alliance with Russia, Turkey, and Iran together. I think that's pretty significant. I also think it's really significant that one of the people that said that Trump should not do it was the Pope. I think that tells you where he's at.
Yeah, I remember, actually, it was U.S. News and World Report probably 10 years ago that had a graphic of which religious denominations, Christian denominations, were on the side of the Palestinians and which ones were on the side of Israel. And the Palestinians were Catholic, Anglican, Lutheran, Episcopalian, Methodist, all the daughters of the Reformation. And on the other side, on the side of Israel, were the Baptists, the Amish, the Mennonites, the Assemblies of God, which came out of Baptist pastors and got spirit-filled. And, you know, all of the charismatic offshoots that came from the Baptists were on the side of Israel. And all the daughters of the Reformation were on the side of the Palestinians with the Catholic Church. It was really interesting. I mean, just absolutely down the line.
That is interesting. Anyway, it's certainly a very significant moment in history, I think. So we'll have to wait and see what happens, what reactions there are. But, you know, we've got certainly right. Turkey and Erdogan and are not happy, so and many of the others, of course, the Palestinians won't be happy, and so on. So anyway, we'll have to see what actually plays out as a result, but I think it's a very significant day in history.
Absolutely.
How are things going with your community, and what's been happening since we last spoke?
Oh, wow. In the last year, it's been a wild ride for sure. The Lord had been telling us for about 10 years that we were going to have a farm and a cave. And back in 2011, we rented space in a cave. Here in Kansas City, we have about a 16-foot layer of limestone geologically through most of the city. And what they do is they mine into it, pull out the limestone for gravel and concrete, whatever, and then leave them for storage with columns every 30 or 40 feet. And the largest underground commercial complex in the world is the Subtropolis. It's here in Liberty. You can find videos of Jesse Ventura driving through it, about it being a FEMA camp. But it's about 50 million square feet underground. And anyway, so we had rented space in one of the caves. In 2015, a property came on the market that was a 67-acre farm with about a million square feet old limestone mine underneath it. And the payments were going to be a few hundred dollars a month more than what we were renting the other space for. So we have no deep pockets, and most of all of us have sold everything we had and gave it to the poor, so credit's no good either. So I talked to the owner and said, would you be willing to owner finance it? And on a handshake, he said, sure. So we did no financials, no mortgage, no nothing, no whatever. He wrote up a contract, we signed it, and got on the land. And it was zoned for commercial applications for, you know, all kind of agricultural stuff, plus hotel, restaurant, convenience store, church. You can do all kinds of stuff on it. And so we went to zoning and said, can we have a church on the property? And they said, sure. But their definition of church is basically sanctuary, classrooms, you know, fellowship hall, Sundays and Wednesday nights, and nothing residential. There's no allowance in the code in this county for a monastery or a convent or even a parsonage. So we tried to rezone it. We tried to do this and that. The neighbors were all up in arms, didn't want us there. Right now we're in a federal and state lawsuit against the county for not allowing us to be the kind of church God is calling us to be. I don't know what they would do if a mosque or a Muslim, a mosque or a Buddhist temple or something like that wanted to come in here. The federal lawsuit has stayed while the state is going through the process to see if they can settle it. But it's been pretty expensive. We've had to find an extra couple $1,000s a month for the lawyer, but they're cutting their costs. And if we win, there'll be damages for all of the 2.5 years of not allowing us to do what we felt like by our faith we were supposed to be doing. And anyway, so right now we have animals on the farm and we have storage in the cave, but we're not allowed to have people living on the property. The exciting thing is that it's the farm is about 15 minutes away from where we have been living in Liberty, Missouri for the last 12, 13, whatever years it has been now, and 10 years. And but it's real inconvenient to be out there checking on the animals and then leaving them at night. So we're allowed a night watchman, but just recently a mobile home park near the cave, near the farm, that is trying to get cleaned up and improved, offered to donate to the ministry mobile homes if we would clean them up and paint them and put people in them that would take care of them. And so right now we have 8 mobile homes that we're working on and that are closer to the farm and will allow us to get out of the townhouses we've been renting and move people closer to the farm and then even have extra quarters for guests to come and visit and things like that until we get the ability to live on farm, and then we'll be building tiny homes or whatever we can get past zoning, shipping containers inside the cave or whatever, whatever's going to work. But, so that's been a real blessing, and we're, raising money right now to, getting donations of carpet and whatever to remodel these. We have a lot of folks that, for some, it'll be the first time they ever had their own home or, you know, some of them we could put 4 or 5 young guys that are here for the ministry that have come from all over. We just had 2 guys in the last week move here. One from, one's coming tomorrow or the day after from South Carolina and the other, from California that have come to be part of this and to help and to, you know, put their hands to the plow and see what God's going to build here. There's, the land is really beautiful. We want it to be a refuge and a retreat center and for people to be able to come and learn self-sufficiency. We're raising rabbits for meat, New Zealand white, New Zealand whites that are 6 or 8 pounds of good protein, and they reproduce, you know, like bunnies. so every 30 days, you can, you know, have 8 or 10 more of them. And Rabbits are a great, if we're going to talk about, you know, end of the world, a sustainability, self-sufficiency kind of scenarios, I would really, really encourage people to learn how to raise rabbits. In a year, you're going to get more meat from two rabbits than from a cow. If you let them reproduce on schedule, it can be anywhere from 1,000 to 1,500 pounds of meat. Rabbit would be a great meat source. And most municipalities, at least in this country, don't really restrict rabbits. I understand Australia has a big problem with rabbits, but that's a different story. You could pretty well raise rabbits in a closet of an apartment. They don't make noise. If you clean them, they're not smelly, and they're easy to slaughter. You know, there's not a lot of restrictions. There's no big rabbit industry like there is with chickens and other things. So it's a real good way to get your fingers wet in livestock without needing acres and acres of land for a cow or whatever. So right now on farm, we have chickens, ducks. We raise American guinea hogs, which is a heritage pig that is meant for homesteading. They stay fairly small, 250 to 300 pounds. And they forage for themselves, so you don't have to even feed them. You can feed them table scraps, or with us, it's leftovers from the food pantry or things that have gone bad. But you can just let them loose. They're kind of like dogs. They just kind of hang around and find some place to sleep, and they're not a threat to eat your kids like market hogs, like that can get to be 600 pounds and eat your children. Every year in Missouri, we usually lose at least one or two pig farmers that fell down when they were slopping the hogs, and they eat them, and they just find their watch and their boots. Market hogs are nasty, 600-pound monsters that are scary, but the guinea hogs are real sweet, have a sweet disposition, and are a hog that I'd recommend people to look at if they're homesteading. We have ducks, chickens. We raise quail. They're another very low impact, very easy to raise thing. The eggs are great. People that are allergic to chicken eggs can still have duck and quail eggs. The quails are easy to slaughter. Not a lot of meat, but they reproduce in 19 days in the incubator and are fairly quiet and not too messy. We also have a variety of goats. And Katahdin sheep, they're a hair sheep, so they don't have wool, so they don't need to be. New Zealand has pretty much absorbed the entire wool market, so there's no money in wool in the United States. So the Katahdin sheep were bred to not have to be sheared, and they have they're not wiry wool type. It's more like hair, like on the goats. But they're a really good meat animal, and you can milk them, but most people don't. They're mostly a meat animal. And we've got some miniature horses that we use because one of the ways we've found to be able to bless people with what we have is we do a mobile petting zoo. So we go to birthday parties and old folks' homes and daycare centers or whatever and do a mobile petting zoo. And we can do pony rides with these miniature horses, people really enjoy it. The kids really enjoy it. We're hoping by spring to have a petting zoo in a kind of a fixed location on the farm where people can come, or while they're there for other things, inner city youth groups can come out and camp on the land and have a retreat and talk about Jesus and play with the animals and so on. So
cool.
It's just an extra, you know, it's... We want to grown-ups can come and be serious about Jesus, and they're like, yeah, whatever. I just want prayer. I want deliverance. I want to hear God better. But they're going to come with their families a lot of times, and you know, we want to have something for the kids and stuff too. And if we're going to have a farm, you're going to have baby animals of some sort or another. So people like that, and we want to have a place where people can come and you know, when we had a thrift store, I really saw the thrift store as camouflage for ministry. And that was just a way to get people in so we could pray with them and hold their hand
find out how their day was going and cry with them. And it's kind of the same with the petting zoo and all the other stuff. I think it's just an introduction so that they can learn what we're doing and why, and the message God put on our heart. But that's some of what's happening. The other thing is we're digging some ponds, and depending on, you know, if people have room in their land or not, here you can dig a pond up to 1 acre without an engineer or without any zoning requirements or whatever. And an acre is a pretty good size pond.
Yeah, it's huge. Yeah.
So, you know, if you know somebody with a backhoe, dig a hole in the ground and get some fish in it. And that is essentially, you know, a refrigerator full of meat that you can access anytime down the road when you need some food. It's a great available food source, protein source, down the road. So, and starter fish, or to have somebody come stock a pond, you know, that's smallish, is not too expensive, a few hundred dollars, but, they're going to grow out and, naturally feed on the other fish or whatever, if you need to feed them to. But it doesn't have to be a big hole in the ground. In Missouri, it has to be at least 8 feet deep so they won't freeze in the winter. But it doesn't, you know, it could be 15, 20 feet across, but at least you're going to have some food source there. We've been going through the property trying to identify edibles on the property that are already there, whether it's here in Missouri, we have wild plums and blackberries and pecans and, you know, other stuff that maybe it's not oranges and watermelons and bananas, but it's edible if you need it. And so we've been trying to catalog what's already on the property. There's 67 acres of mostly wooded property is a lot to explore and to
find out what we have out there. That is a decent size. Yes. So are you growing vegetables and things as well, or?
Yeah, we have a garden that did okay this year. It's really a matter of manpower. And the goal, of course, is to have people on farm where they can wake up in the morning and get out and do some stuff and not have to drive 15 minutes to the farm and all that kind of stuff. So I'm hoping that by summer we'll have navigated through these legal battles and be able to have people on farm where they can really be tending to it all the time. I know we're going to have to do some better fencing because the rabbits ate too much. And the deer can jump 8 feet straight up in the air and get over most fences too. So we're looking probably February, putting up a high tunnel, which is, you know, half round greenhouse, maybe 30 foot by 100 foot. We are growing some things that don't grow in Missouri, like moringas and bananas and oranges and limes and other stuff, because we have the cave where if we grow them in pots, they can be out in the Missouri summer. It's actually quite tropical. And then we can forklift these pots and stuff into the cave, into rooms that we can heat and have grow lights.
Wow, that's a great idea. So, yeah. So how big is the cave again?
It has 6 acres that have lights and is easily accessible and been used for stuff before. And there's another 14 acres that is kind of off in the darkness where water accumulates and it gets kind of muddy and is not particularly usable without us doing some changes to all of that. But there was a haunted house in there for a while that had 10,000 square feet. 6 acres is 350,000 square feet. That's two super Walmarts. If you're, I guess, in the U.S., that makes sense. But that's a lot of room. That's a lot of room for us to store disaster relief supplies. We have food. We have for a while we were getting excess from other thrift stores, but they didn't sell. And like neck braces and knee braces and crutches and wheelchairs and all kinds of stuff we had stored in there. And for a while there was a tactical shooting range inside the cave. A guy built with railroad ties, all kind of shooting range that the police and sheriff would come and qualify back around the year 2000, 1999. And but he spent about $500,000 in there improving, putting up walls and offices and putting in the shooting range and all that kind of stuff. And then he died and somebody bought the property and used it for other things. There was paintball in there for a while. So it's been used for a variety of things over the years. But the mine was finished about 1950. So we hear rumors from people in town that it was a speakeasy during Prohibition days in the 30s and or 20s, and that we found evidence there was a chop shop in there with piles of license plates and car parts. And we found a still at one point in the back. So there, it's been a place for people to go misbehave. For a long time, it was just wide open, and it was, you know, everybody would take their girlfriend in the cave and misbehave. But there was a lot of vandalism and other stuff over the years in there. But we've spent a lot of money fixing the electrical and the, you know, getting it livable, and lots more to do. You know, if people wanted to help, our website is fellowshipofthemartyrs.com. There's information there how people could help, or if they wanted to come visit and see it, would be welcome to do that. We'd love to have them come and see what God's doing here. I'm in touch with, probably 12 or 15 other folks that have been told to do a similar thing, and you know, have a farm, but are building extra buildings or waiting for the money to do what God's told them to do. But it's certainly not just us that's been told to prepare a place. And there are certainly groups that I'm in touch with, that you're in touch with, that are preparing various plans for how to feed the Christians when things go all squirrely.
So do you also, you know, store stuff like grains and those kind of things?
Whatever, as it comes available. Back several years ago, the Lord said, you know, whatever is non-perishable, stash it. And whatever else, because we have a large food pantry, we feed a lot of people, and we have teams to go out every day to the grocery stores and restaurants and harvest leftovers, and you know, whether it's bakery or dairy or that kind of stuff, we all give away right away. It's already like at its date, and it needs to go in 72 hours or 48 hours or less. But when we get canned goods or buckets of sugar or salt or something like that, we pretty much stash all that stuff. And canned goods are actually fine way past whatever date is on the can. We had pallets of Gatorade that had a sell-by date, and I couldn't believe like what's going to happen to Gatorade. You know, like it's like the day after that it's gonna, you know, it's gonna go bad. That's crazy. But all kind of stuff. Whatever the Lord puts in our hand, we look at it and evaluate it and see what we need to do with it. We don't get, we don't have the funding to go buy a lot of stuff. It's just kind of been as the Lord has provided. But, you know, if you are faithful, he'll make you build bigger barns. And this is about as big a barn as I can imagine. Pallet racking and trying to get it organized and what's what, and get it up off the floor and into big containers we can forklift on and off the shelves and stuff like that. But there's a lot that we need as far as organization, and just even keeping the raccoons out of it is a problem. We have guys back there sometimes at night with pellet guns and trying to, because the cave, we can't. There's different places you could get into the cave, and the raccoons have figured out, maybe even places a person couldn't, but a raccoon could squeeze through. And I had a pallet of MREs of military rations, they weren't in cans or buckets, and there wasn't anything keeping the foil wrapping isn't going to stop a raccoon. They went clean through a whole pallet of MREs before we could stop them.
They're not cheap either, those.
yeah.
So do you teach other people, like are people wanting to learn about how to do the, you know, on a smaller scale for themselves? Do you help them learn how to be prepared?
Sure, absolutely. We have been having conferences with the rabbits about once a month and inviting anybody that wants to come. You know, it's about 4 or 5 hours, and we give them some materials, and then they leave with a buck and two does, a cage that they made for themselves, you know, knowledge of how to make more cages, and then they're off and ready to go with their own, you know, start to breed them. And if they want more, they can buy more rabbits and stuff like that. So yeah, we've been doing some animal husbandry stuff. We've got people that are experts at bushcraft and, you know, what grows here you can eat and what not to eat, what mushrooms are okay and what aren't, stuff like that. So in the spring, we'll be gearing up with a lot more of that, where we can have groups come walk the trails and look at the different wildlife and know what's what and medicinal uses and edible uses and stuff like that. So we really want it to be a training and equipping center. You know, how to get your cup full, how to walk in holiness, how to get more of the gifts operating in your life, how to hear God better, but also, you know, how to survive what's coming. I think it's, for me, I think I'm in a place where I can just ask the Lord, is that edible? And get a straight answer. But a lot of people aren't there, don't believe they can, or have too much other stuff clogging them up to hear the Lord well enough. It's knowledge they probably ought to accumulate, as we also help them learn to hear God better, and He can direct all their paths. But yeah, we have been doing a conference. Want to have a full roster of you know, monthly conferences on different topics of survivability that I think people are going to need. I kind of got inspired when I read the book The Heavenly Man by Yun and Hathaway, about Brother Yun in China, who was the most wanted criminal in China and a leader of the underground house church movement. And they go, the Back to Jerusalem movement is training up 100,000 missionaries to go all over the world from China. And they go through how to get out of a second story window and fall without hurting yourself, how to get out of handcuffs, you know, all kinds of evasion, how to break out of jail, you know, kind of stuff that our seminaries don't teach. And, in China, you know, if you're going to be a pastor, you need to have done at least a couple years in prison, or you don't have the respect of the people, you know? So, I decided a long time ago when I first read that book that, yeah, I'd rather be on their team. You know, if I'm going to hang with Christians, and that's why the Lord named the ministry the Fellowship of the Martyrs, because that's the koinonia of the martus, the comradeship of the witnesses. Martus means witness in Greek. It only came to mean people that wouldn't change their testimony even unto death because of the Christians. And a martyr isn't a guy that straps a bomb on his chest and gets on a bus and kills people. A martyr is somebody that will not change their mind no matter what. And that's what the church ought to be. The people that are absolutely fixed, that are absolutely sure, and that aren't going to back down no matter what, and that love one another. Koinonia is a really rich, beautiful word that involves more than, it seems like church sometimes is more like a bag of marbles where they're just clinging and clanging off of each other, or a box with a puzzle in it where you can hear the pieces moving around. But church should be a bunch of grapes smashed together, broken out of their little shell and mixed into a new wine where you can't, they're inextricable from one another. And an assembly, a puzzle isn't an assembly until it's assembled. When they're just in the box bumping around on each other, it's not an assembly. I think so much of the Western church especially has, people are so isolated, and even if they're all sitting next to each other in the pews, they're not truly assembled the way the Lord wants them to be, and they're not truly poured into one another and a part of each other's lives the way they should be. And so that's a lot of what we do, is teach people how to really pour into one another, how to help people get their cup full, keep their cup full, get the stuff out of their cup that doesn't belong, and to keep their vessel in honor. Get a bigger cup so there's more and more of Him and less of you all the time. But I think that happens best, or at least fastest, in community,
When you're in a 24/7 learning environment, you have a great opportunity to grow all the time with people around you, and not just a couple hours a week when you go to some building that people say is the house of God.
Unfortunately, I think so much of the modern church, modern Christianity, is more about looking after number one and prospering and, you know, being blessed. And you go to church on a Sunday or a Saturday, whichever day it is you do it, and then you go about your life, and, you know, and God blesses you, and that's it. And it's not really very much like the early church was anyway. I don't see an awful lot of Acts chapter 2 or the whole book of Acts in the church. Generally, it's, you know, we've got away from that. And you talk about martyrs and things, and we never really hear spoken about the fact that the apostles, or the, you know, the 12 disciples all met martyrs' deaths, apart from John. And he ended up on the island of Patmos as a prisoner. And that doesn't really get talked about, you know, when we hear a prosperity gospel and how much God wants to, you know, make people blessed and rich and things, we don't really hear that. Or the fact that we could be going to go through hard times, like what you're preparing for. It's not exactly talked about in most churches.
Well, and let me be clear, I don't see us as preppers. I'm just obeying what the Lord told us. And we are not preparing a cave where we can lock the doors and hide. We are preparing a place where we can serve a community when everything else falls down. And my intention is to give away to the last grain of rice and take care of other people, not ourselves. And we, all of these people here, have a heart for service and for washing each other's feet and for loving even the people that disagree with us, but especially the brethren, and making sure that even the people now that think we're crazy and think that's not going to happen. You know, I wrote letters to the pastors in town 14 years ago saying, I don't want to see food riots. We need to start caring for the poor. And that sounded pretty crazy in the middle of the Bush administration, but now we got half the country on food stamps, and a lot of those churches have canceled building campaigns because they needed to care for the people in their congregation that were jobless and other stuff. And so, the Lord's proven me right. It just took a while to filter down, but I just got an email the other day from a lady, I think in Finland, that was thanking me for the videos. I'd never heard from her before, but she said, you know, there's a food pantry that wasn't there before because of the inspiration of what you guys are doing. And that just really touches my heart. And I want to know that we're making a difference, helping people hear God better, be closer to the Lord, get saved, but also feeding the hungry and taking care of the lost and stuff. And, you know, I know that several people that have contacted me that bought a house three times larger than they needed for their family so that they could take people in that were in need and care for folks. And, you know, that's a beautiful thing. And I think is what Isaiah 58 says you're supposed to do, to take in the poor wanderer and clothe them and feed them and care for them and stop the finger pointing and the arguing and get about being wearing the apron. And that's, I think that's the Lord's heart. I'm always suspicious of success. A guy wrote me an email the other day, said, hey, you should do worship like this because the largest church in the world does it this way. And I'm like, you're not going to ever get me to go along with the largest church in the world does it this way as a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, when Jesus had too many people following him around, he turned around and said, you can't follow me unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood. And they're like, wow, you're nuts. We're out of here.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Less people to feed. No problem. You know, I think you ought to be controversial. I had a pastor of a large church in town. I wanted them to go help us distribute food in the park to people in need. And I had a semi-trailer of food donated, and I just wanted some volunteers. And he said, you know, you're kind of a hot potato. I can't, I can't be anywhere near you. I'm like, why aren't you a hot potato? You're playing golf with the mayor and bankers and lawyers or whatever. How come you're not hated? How come you're not saying things that run people away from you? You know, you ought to be, if you're going to say what needs to be said right now, you're going to be invited a lot of places once, you know, and it's going to pucker the wallpaper and people are going to be incensed and throw you out and not invite you back, because that's the kind of message that needs to be said right now. You know, that they're, you know, I got a word from the Lord a couple of weeks ago that he is going to shake everything because too many people are comfortable. Too many people think they're okay. Whether it's a once saved, always saved, or rich and have need of nothing, or, you know, whatever, the world's just going to click on and they're going to go on, you know, having their parties and being given in marriage and all this stuff. The Bible says they're going to be completely oblivious to how truly wretched and the sinking sand that they're really standing on. And the Lord said, I'm going to shake them because they're too comfortable. And I know plenty of pastors that are too comfortable, not to mention people in the pews that punch their clock and think they're okay, and they're not. You know, you need to be walking in holiness. You need to be hearing the voice of God. The day's going to come. He's going to say, move your head 3 inches to the left on the count of three, and a bullet whizzes by. You know, I believe we're going to have a website that's just an IP address, you know, 194.12.3.6. And if you don't ask the Lord what that number is, then you're not going to get on the website and know where we are and where the food is, you know?
Yeah.
I think the Lord can do that. And, I think we're going to need to be able to walk in some of that stuff and hear him well enough to, you know where to go and where to hide and who to trust and who not to trust and all of that. And people, so many people are asleep. I get calls and emails every day from all over the world from people saying, I cannot find a decent church in my town. I cannot find another obedient Christian in my town. And, you know, I'm sure they're there somewhere that the God's got a remnant, but man, it's dark out there. And I've written 8 books about the state of the church, about what's going to be required for revival, about, you know, how to get your cup so full of Jesus nothing else can fit, about deliverance and demons, about all kind of stuff that's free on our website. The Lord said, give it all away. You know, it's there for download, audiobooks. If you want to order paperback, because I figure it's $30 for an inkjet printer cartridge to print it off, or you can pay 10 and order the paperback, but it's there to read online free if you want. Everything that he's taught me in all of this time, it's about urgency. It's always been about urgency. I remember 2005, I thought, man, if he doesn't come by the end of this year, I'm just going to explode. Things are so bad. And here we are 12 years later. And, you know, I don't know when he's coming back, but it could be any minute. And even if it's not, you could get hit by a bus tomorrow, and you better be right, and you better get about it and make sure that each person has their heart right and that they're right with the Lord. Because we don't know the day or the hour for ourselves or for the world. And through everything, it's just been constant urgency in with me in this ministry.
And what would you say to the people that are listening, the ones that aren't in some sort of a community, you know, what's the message that they should take out of this?
Well, I think it's going to be extremely difficult for people to survive what's coming at all. And I think it's going to be even harder alone. We are sheep. As a farmer now for the last couple of years, I've learned a lot about the agrarian essence of some of the parables that Jesus told, the reality of why he calls us sheep, because they're about the stupidest farm animal there is. And they have to be in community, and they have to be shown where the food is and where the water is. They don't remember how to get home. They will stare up at the rain and drown with their mouth open. I mean, if they're big wool sheep will get wet and fall over, and they're so heavy they can't get back up, and a shepherd has to put them back on their feet. There's a reason he called us sheep, and one is that we're flock animals. And despite that, I've got a video called The Remnant Training Program that's on our YouTube channel with 1,300 other videos. And it talks about the book of Micah. And I would encourage people to read the book of Micah. I think it's, of course, most of the minor prophets are end times kind of prophecy. And even, you know, Daniel, Ezekiel, all of that stuff. But Micah especially alternates between the false shepherds and what he's going to do to them and the flock of his inheritance that he put into captivity, that dwelt alone in the mountains, in the woods, in Carmel, and that he fed with his rod, and that walked with a limp. And he says, this is the flock of my inheritance. And more I'm meeting those people that have been alone, can't find any fellowship, put into captivity, whether it's bad marriage, bad job, physical difficulty, one thing or another, and they walk with a limp because they've wrestled with God, like Jacob, and they think they're utterly alone. And he says, in the last days, I'm going to bring them together in the fields of Bashan, which is the heartland, the breadbasket, the pasture land of Israel, like Kansas and Missouri and Nebraska and Iowa is here, the grain fields, that he's going to bring them together in the fields of Bashan, and they're going to make the noises of many men, and their holiness is going to shock the nations. And what we have found is that when these lonely little sheep come together, they don't want to fight anymore. They don't want to debate about the rapture or whether to have communion with grape juice or wine or whatever. They're just so happy to have somebody to hug and to cry together and pray together. My wife the other day went into Walmart with one of the girls and ran into a group of the other girls that live in the community. And they were all like, oh, it's so good to see you, and hugging each other. And a lady near him says, like, have you not seen them in a while? Oh, no, we live together. I just saw them this morning. But it really is. It's a beautiful, amazing. People come here and they're like, this feels like home. I feel like I've known you all my life. I'm like, yeah, he's doing something. You know, it's beautiful. And so my word to people would be, you can prep all you want. You can store up what all you want. But if you're alone, you're going to have a really hard time. You need a tribe, and you need a community. You need to find some folks that love the Lord and that are going to love you like the Lord, you know, loves you, and ride this out. And I think he's going to be gathering them. This is one of those fields of Bashan where he's been gathering people. And the Lord's given me visions of, you know, RVs parked all over town, with people coming from all over, the population of the city quadrupling or more, every city park with people praising and worshiping the Lord, just led by the Holy Spirit with food and canned goods and sharing with everybody. And I believe it's, you know, I believe it's worth my life. It's worth whatever I have to spend to see that. If that's real, if that was really him, and I believe it was, I'll give up whatever to see the body of Christ come together. You know, I've been 10 years, 12 years now, talking to pastors. Can we just have a family reunion in the park? Could you just invite your folks, bring your chicken salad, bring your guitar, you know, let's just come out to the park all together and meet one another and hug one another. And the pastors are like, no, I'm never going to let anybody from my congregation fellowship with anybody from any other congregation that does use the 1611 King James. Or the Church of Christ says, no, we can't, we don't believe in instruments in worship. So if you're going to have instruments, we can't come. Or the Baptists, or, oh, if you're going to speak in tongues, we can't come. Or God forbid a Mormon shows up, nobody will know what to do. You know, it's insanely difficult to get these people who say that they're following the guy whose last dying wish was that we would be one to actually be one. You know, they just don't want to come together. And, you know, in New Orleans a few years ago, the pastors all stopped what they were doing and fed the hungry and clothed the naked, and they stopped arguing, and all it took was a hurricane. And I think we might need 7 years of sustained pounding to keep us on our knees so we don't have time to argue about stupid stuff anymore. And we just comes down to,
hey, I love Jesus, I got a can of corn. Hey, I love Jesus, I got a can of beans. Great, let's just sit together and cry and eat these, you know. And people don't know how bad it's going to be, Tony. I was in the convenience store in the middle of summer, getting a big old Dr. Pepper with ice, and I'm pouring ice in this 44-ounce cup, and the Lord says, they don't realize how much they're going to miss ice. And I'm like, wow. I mean, if you don't have ice,
yeah,
you don't have electricity, you don't have air conditioning, you don't have a whole bunch of other stuff, you know, to just, it's a regular thing. I'm on the run all the time. I'm in between appointments. I stop at Burger King or Taco Bell, and the Lord says, the day's going to come, you will wish you had this burrito. Mm-hmm. You know, you will wish you had something this good to eat. And, what does it mean? A time like the world has never seen, you know, worse than the Ukrainian potato famine, worse than Mao wiping out 30 million people in China, worse than, you know, disasters and tsunamis. And, you know, are we prepared to go through this? And are we prepared to go through it rejoicing, knowing that it's from His hand and it's a gift and it's a good thing, that all things work to the good? It's one thing to get people prepared to suffer. It's another to get people prepared to suffer with rejoicing in their hearts. And, you know, that's the challenge. And, the message He gave me is, you know, die daily now so that when somebody puts a gun to your head and says, deny Christ, you can say, look, I've been dead for a while. I was martyred a long time ago when I walked away from my business and my life and my money and everything else. There's nothing you can do to me. The best, you know, I've talked to people about the way of the master and all kinds of different strategies people have of winning souls. But Jesus laid it out in John 17. He said, when they are one, as I and the Father are one, then the world will know that you sent me. And I am convinced that when the world sees the Christians be one, they will go, wow, that's different. They used to be in four corners of the same intersection in different buildings, not talking to each other. Something's different. And when they see our love for one another, when they see us not only caring about ourselves, but caring about them and in love, reaching out to them and wanting to be one with them, with the lost, with the hurting, with the atheists, with the haters, then it's going to be different. They're going to see that Jesus is real. That can only be supernatural. That has to be Jesus. You know, they saw that in the book of Acts when Jews brought Gentiles into their homes and were sharing meals with them and sharing the roof with them. You didn't do that. I don't know that we have racism now like they did then. The Gentiles were so despised. If a Gentile shadow touched you, you were unclean. If a Gentile drank out of a cup, you had to break it. You couldn't wash it enough to get the Gentile filth off of that cup if you were a Jew. And then all of a sudden, they're in their homes and they're praying together and crying together and their kids are playing together, and man, something must have happened. You know, that's supernatural. And it did. It shocked the world and it shocked the Jews, and it brought people to wonder, what is this that just happened to you? Because, you know, you're different. And I'm not sure we're getting that in church anymore. I can't find any. I mean, I've probably been to 400 different congregations in the last 10 years, and you know, there's all kind of nonsense preached except repentance, except brokenness and holiness and a real true need for Him to be Lord of your life all the way.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that's a great, great message, great way to be closing this up. Can you just tell our listeners your website again and your YouTube channel, Doug?
Sure. Well, the YouTube channel is FOTM1. The number one, FOTM, like Fellowship of the Martyrs, the number one. The website is fellowshipofthemartyrs.com, and there's information there if people want to help. I think our fight with the government, this legal thing, is going to set a precedent in the United States for other intentional communities and other groups that want to be able to live together as a church on a piece of land. And I hope that it has some real impact beyond just us fighting this out. But we've pretty much been alone. We haven't had any help from the Pacific Institute or ACLJ or any of these legal defense things. They're all busy doing other stuff, and we've been footing the bill for the whole thing. We also have the farm website is thelibertyfarm.com, and you can see more about the farm there and different animals, and we load up interesting videos and other people's ideas of how to do stuff and things too. We hope to be able to have teams down the road where we can send a team to Thailand or the Philippines or to Christians, wherever, and help them get a farm started, get trained up and do sustainability all over in little pockets as we're financially able and as we're invited to go do that more and more. And we're in Liberty, Missouri. We're right outside of Kansas City, dead center in the middle of the country. And if people are interested, the contact information is on the website, and we'd be glad for them to come out and see what we're doing and be a part of it. And in whatever way, and for sure, we need your prayers, especially as we're fighting the government, to be able to be a residential church, to be able to be a community of faith, living together, on the property and doing all the things God has called us to do. Like I said, we got the food pantry. We do a lot in the community. We've never really focused on building a sanctuary. We focused on being the church and being the hands and feet of Jesus to a lost and dying world. And it's a long, hard thing. We are hated. We're lied about. We've been slandered all kind of ways. We've been through the ringer for trying to be like Jesus. And he said it would be like that. And I'm grateful that it is. But I've got several videos about, rejoice or die. The command over and over and over in the Bible is to rejoice, that whatever comes from his hand is good, that all things work to the good and the love of God. And Satan wants us to sit around and pout and be depressed and be demoralized and frustrated. And Jesus says, nope, it's good. It's from me. It's part of the plan. And you need to buck up. Half of the church in America is on antidepressants. They're at least the ones that say they're the church. And I don't see how that could be when the Lord said, rejoice. He didn't give us a spirit of fear. He taught us that, all things work to the good. So even if it's hard, even if it hurts, whatever you're going through right now, be obedient to the command to rejoice, things will change and you'll see, he'll give you the strength to endure anything.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Doug. This has been, great having you on the show, and there's a lot, I think, of food for thought in there. So thanks for being on the Minute to Midnight show today, and I do hope that people will check out what you're doing and pray for your ministry and actually maybe go visit. So thanks.
Thank you, Tony. Appreciate it. Anytime. Love to be on more often. It's been a while.
Yeah, it has. Yeah, we'll definitely have you back again. So thanks, Doug.
Okay. Thanks, Tony. Bye-bye.
Folks, you can find all of our shows on our website, aminutetomidnight.com. We put them on there first, like 1 or 2 days before YouTube. They also go on iTunes. We have a community forum now on our A Minute to Midnight website, which you're welcome to join, particularly if you're a regular listener. We'd love to hear from you there. It's our attempt to build some community as well. So, yes, our website, remember, Midnight is spelled MIDNITE. So that's aminutetomidnight.com. And also, I write, play, and record all the music in our shows. And you can find some of my music there on the website. And we do run A Minute to Midnight entirely by donations. And we really appreciate the people that help support us that way. So we couldn't do it without your help. And you can find ways to donate on our website as well. And also on our YouTube channel, there's a PayPal link there too. Well, that's about it for today's show. Thank you for listening. And we should be back with another show in a few days' time. In the meantime, have a great week, and this is Tony signing off on behalf of the A Minute to Midnight team.